KALW.
What I actually really need from him is decriminalization of street-based selling and street-based using, because that will help us divert even more resources into the community.
In San Francisco, prosecutors continue to charge an overwhelming percentage of drug dealing cases that police bring them.
Sometimes we can make arrests, and we do, and they come out and somebody else has taken the place of that person we just arrested.
Today, the role of progressive prosecutors in the opioid epidemic. Then, what's next for San Francisco's District Attorney Chesa Boudin as he continues his second year in office?
We should not be surprised by the backlash. We've seen that backlash in very dramatic forms.
We continue our exploration of the San Francisco DA's office. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Nearly 700 people died from drug overdoses in San Francisco last year. That's far more than the number of people who died from COVID-19 in San Francisco in 2020. Some people blame the San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin for not being tough enough on the people selling the drugs. But Boudin says he still prosecutes an overwhelming majority of drug dealing cases police bring him, with little evidence that arrests are reducing overdose deaths. So what role should law enforcement play in responding to this crisis? Newly elected progressive DAs across the country are still trying to figure that out. In the meantime, the drug overdose crisis shows no signs of slowing down in San Francisco. KALW's Holly J. McDeed brings us the final installment of the series, The Progressive Prosecutor.
Chesa Boudin grew up visiting his mom in prison. She was arrested in 1981 for her role in a robbery in New York, where three people were killed. And while visiting his mom, Boudin became close friends with a boy named Lorenzo. Lorenzo was visiting his mom too, except she was in jail for a crime related to drugs. Both women spent almost the same number of years in jail.
It's kind of unthinkable that we would send someone to prison for decades for drug-related offenses. And yet in this country, for many, many years, that has been normal. It has become normalized that for possession of controlled substances, people will spend their entire life or their entire adult life in prisons.
Boudin says both Lorenzo and Lorenzo's mother were casualties of the war on drugs. Lorenzo grew up without a mom and was eventually incarcerated himself and later deported.
Lorenzo is someone who had all the potential in the world, who's smart, who's hardworking, who's passionate, who's compassionate. But growing up without a mother, growing up poor and black in Brooklyn as an immigrant, he also had a very high-risk environment when he didn't have parents in the household with him.
That friendship with Lorenzo eventually helped shape Boudin's understanding of the kind of prosecutor he wanted to become.
We need to think with empirical evidence about what is the best way to keep our streets safe, to reduce dependence on dangerous drugs, to prevent overdoses, and to hold people accountable who violate our laws. Sending everyone to prison for as long as possible hasn't worked. We've tried it, and I refuse to double down on the failures of the war on drugs.
You want to join me here? Won't you be seated, please, ladies and gentlemen?
In 1971, President Richard Nixon declared the beginning of that war.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. This will be a worldwide offensive.
San Francisco, though, has long forged its own path when it comes to addressing drug use. The Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, for instance, was founded during the Summer of Love in June of 1967. The clinic included a drug treatment program.
By 1969, the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic had set up its own heroin detoxification center. A year later, it was treating 60 new junkies a day.
Workers at the clinic began providing medication for seizures, pain, and diarrhea. Even though it was illegal for physicians to give controlled medication to people with addiction at the time, San Francisco volunteers started a needle exchange program in 1988 before it was legal in California to help stop the spread of HIV. Terrence Hallinan, a district attorney during the 90s, publicly rejected the term set by the war on drugs. He praised the value of cannabis instead.
Let us reschedule marijuana and make this herb available
to anyone who can benefit for its wonderful, miraculous medical properties. Thank you.
San Francisco doctors now bring prescriptions to help people ease off opioids directly to people on the streets. And people can receive treatment for addiction while incarcerated in county jails. Those harm reduction strategies are part of why Kristen Marshall lives in San Francisco. She's from North Carolina and grew up seeing how people viewed drug use as an individual moral failing.
I moved to San Francisco and saw that people were doing it different. I saw the way community takes care of people who use drugs and how people who use drugs take care of their community.
Marshall is now the manager of the DOPE Project, part of the National Harm Reduction Coalition. The harm reduction philosophy emphasizes ways to lessen the negative impacts of drug use. Evidence shows those strategies save lives. Still, nearly 700 people died of drug overdoses in San Francisco last year. These numbers do not surprise Marshall.
They don't feel like a surprise to anybody in San Francisco who uses drugs and loves people who use drugs.
Overdose deaths had been increasing in San Francisco before Chase Abudin took office. Fentanyl first hit the East Coast, moved to the Midwest, and finally arrived in the West Coast in a big way in recent years. Now it permeates the Bay Area's drug supply. It's a synthetic opioid up to 100 times more powerful than morphine.
It just amplified everybody's risk. Like, the risk didn't just, like, magically appear overnight as fentanyl descended on the city. It makes the villain of this the drug, but the drug didn't cause it, right? The drug didn't cause the overdose crisis.
Marshall says issues like homelessness, poverty, and racism are the root causes here. The numbers show that a disproportionate percentage of people who died from drug overdoses in San Francisco last year were Black.
The house that white supremacy built, right? Like, those things. Health disparities between demographics. So people at the highest risk for overdose, people experiencing homelessness or living in extreme poverty, Black and brown folks, immigrant communities, trans and queer people, and then anybody, like people experiencing high rates of trauma and mental illness, and then anytime any of those things intersect on top of each other.
She also says that when people turn fentanyl into the villain in this crisis, it seems logical to blame the people selling the drugs, and by extension, the district attorney in charge of prosecuting them.
It's the same picture that's been painted for just centuries, is that people who sell drugs are these evil outsiders who come into our very vulnerable communities, you know, get people hooked on this poison, and then, like, profit off of it, right? The reality is that people who sell drugs and then the folks in our city who are selling drugs are just as vulnerable, just as at risk for the same harms as the community that they're selling to is experiencing, because they are all part of the same community.
Experts say it's not clear that arresting drug dealers makes an impact in this crisis because there's just so many of them. Still, some city leaders and community members say law enforcement can't just look the other way when people are dealing drugs that are so deadly. In September of 2020, City Attorney Dennis Herrera sued 28 known drug dealers. He filed civil injunctions to prevent them from coming to the Tenderloin.
These drug dealers do not live in the Tenderloin, but instead travel from around the Bay Area to sell deadly drugs there. The drugs that are fueling the addiction and overdose crisis that we are seeing on our streets.
He said the injunctions were not meant to be a panacea to combat drug dealing, but would give law enforcement one more tool to keep communities safe. Boudin criticized that approach, and on Twitter, he said the sheer number of drug cases in his office are, quote, a huge distraction from violent crime. And he said, don't blame me, because the war on drugs has been a total failure since inception. Boudin also says police keep bringing his office crumbs of drugs rather than kilos. Still, he prosecutes the majority of drug dealing cases police bring him.
And right now, arresting someone with, say, 0.4 grams of fentanyl, while it may save a life and we will prosecute that case, it's simply an ineffective use of limited law enforcement resources. And we see those cases on a regular basis.
But he says he's not prepared to stop prosecuting these cases either. Now, he says, is the wrong time to change that approach.
given the historic numbers of overdoses, given the very desperate situation that we see on our streets in the Tenderloin at Soma in the midst of the pandemic.
San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott does think arrests can be effective.
Because when you look at the quantities of drugs that we're taking off the streets, along with, you know, sometimes guns and other things that are harm to our city, I would hate to think what happened if we didn't make those arrests. You know, we talk about the record level of overdoses that we have, and that's with we've taken thousands of grams of fentanyl off the streets.
Scott began his career as a beat cop in Los Angeles in the 80s, and he says he hasn't seen anything like the overdose crisis in San Francisco. His officers might be bringing Boudin crumbs, but crumbs of fentanyl can kill people.
I came in this profession during the height of the crack cocaine epidemic, and it really devastated our streets and definitely communities of color. It was devastating, but it was different. It was a different impact. You know, you weren't seeing the level of overdoses on the streets from that drug, from crack, like you are with fentanyl.
And now this epidemic is intersecting with a global pandemic, which has put pressure on the criminal justice system to decrease the number of people in jail. Scott says that means some drug dealers who would be behind bars end up back on the streets. He says it's frustrating, but he worries that if police stop arresting people for dealing drugs, even more people will die.
We just have to keep at it and continue to hone our strategies to evolve this work until we have done enough to make a visible difference, because I think that's the thing that's really important. I think our community members want to see a difference, and sometimes we can make arrests, and we do, and they come out and somebody else has taken the place of that person we just arrested. So drugs are still being sold on that corner. It's very difficult.
Chase Boudin agrees the city can't arrest and prosecute its way out of the overdose crisis. He's called for treatment on demand and safe injection sites and expanded diversion programs. And he says he continues to prosecute drug dealers, just as past DAs have done. Supervisor Matt Haney represents the Tenderloin. He says this crisis is so dire that every city official needs to try something new, and that includes the DA.
I am just shocked that even the deaths, the number of deaths, has not shocked the conscience of the entire city.
Haney wants to see different agencies working together on this issue. Instead, he says fear of repeating the war on drugs is leaving departments in silos and the city at a standstill. He says it's not a question of relying on harm reduction or law enforcement. He wants to hear about innovative responses from all fronts.
People don't really know what to do because the tools that we have either are very much focused on harm reduction and don't seem to be working adequately when it comes to fentanyl, or they're very much focused on punitive criminal responses, which are also have a role but are limited in their own way. So I've sort of found myself in a space where I felt like we need to be bigger and smarter in every sphere of the response, and we need all of it.
Boudin agrees he has a role to play here in addressing the city's drug crisis. He says public health solutions need to be driving this conversation.
My staff and my department doesn't have the expertise or the budget to provide direct public health interventions that we know from decades of experience and empirical data are more effective ways to respond to some of these challenges than simply putting people in cages for arbitrary numbers of days or months or years.
Boudin has said he wants to try creative solutions, but he hasn't announced any yet. But then, the city's public health department and the mayor haven't said much either. And Kristen Marshall with the DOPE Project says this year is likely to be even worse. And so she and others are focused on keeping people alive by distributing Narcan, a fast-acting medication that can reverse opioid overdoses. And she's advocating for long-term solutions.
Most of the people doing this work have been living in these communities for their whole lives, right? So we'll be here. We were here long before our city leadership took their positions, and we'll be here long after they leave those positions.
And for prosecutors around the country, the most readily available tool is still punishment. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Jean McDeed.
That story you just heard is the last installment of a series called The Progressive Prosecutor. It was co-reported by Alice Wolfley, Christopher Agusa, Sona Avakian, and KELW Justice reporter Holly J. McDeed. Holly joins me now to talk more about what she learned and what's next as San Francisco DA Chesa Boudin continues his second year in office. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Hannah.
Hey, so that last segment ended on the city's drug overdose crisis. And that's an issue that's been overshadowed by the global pandemic that we're all living. Do you expect the DA to announce any changes this year?
I mean, it's hard to say. I did follow up with the DA's office about new ideas he wants to try. Chesa Boudin wants to try something called law enforcement assisted diversion, or LEAD. In other examples of this program, police refer low-level drug offenders to highly trained and skilled caseworkers. And as Boudin himself has previously noted, the city had tried a very limited version of that before. His office said he's also working with police to try and coordinate arrests and prosecute sellers and suppliers high up in the chain. I think overall, people want to see a coordinated approach. They want to see city leaders taking a uniform stance on this, sending the same kind of messages. And I'm not sure that's happening. I mean, Tenderloin police say they've made 600 arrests for drug dealing in 2020. And it's worth asking what happened after each of those arrests. And this is an issue where the DA is under a lot of pressure to make a tangible difference. And for some of his critics, it's also another reason they want him to step down and they're trying to remove him from office. People are blaming Chesa Boudin for a lot of crime in the city.
But Holly, what does data around crime in San Francisco show right now?
So crime is down overall in San Francisco by about 31%, but burglaries are up 62%. And just yesterday, Mayor London Breed and law enforcement agencies, including the DA's office, announced some changes around communication and tracking repeat offenders. So police will notify the DA when people have been arrested repeatedly. Breed also announced the city is receiving a $1.5 million state grant to boost a violence prevention program. But keep in mind, police are looking at potential budget cuts, and the pandemic is going to have an impact on crime as well because of economic devastation and more opportunities for commercial burglaries because less people are out on the street. UC Berkeley professor Nikki Jones says she's not surprised people are blaming Chesa Boudin.
Definitely because of the degree to which crime is politicized and the deep investments in traditional forms of justice, we can expect Boudin and progressive prosecutors around the country to face a good deal of pressure to go back to the normal way of doing things.
So Holly, overall, do you think Chesa Boudin can do what he said he would do? You know, these big picture things, eliminating racial disparities in the justice system and mass incarceration. Where are we with all of that?
Well, the city's jail population has dropped dramatically this year. Some of that might be because of the pandemic and efforts around the state to keep the population low. But even that task almost feels simple compared to every other issue that Boudin will have to deal with, like a lack of safety nets and support when people are released from jail. And when it comes to other promises he's made, like around police accountability, he did charge a former police officer with homicide. And that's a big step, but that doesn't mean that officer will ever face any kind of sentence. Addressing racial disparities, mental health issues, and addiction in the justice system are going to take more than just Chesa Boudin. And this is a prosecutor who is facing a lot of backlash. So far in the last couple of months, there have already been two high-profile fatal crashes in the city, one involving a suspect who was on probation and recently arrested for a DUI. In another case, a suspect had been arrested multiple times while out on parole before he hit and killed two people on New Year's Eve. So there is a tremendous amount of pressure on Boudin's office not to make mistakes and not to allow people who may go on to commit serious crimes out of jail. On the flip side of that, there are also a lot of people who just don't think a prosecutor should be driving the conversation around criminal justice reform. I spoke with Abby Smith, a professor of law at Georgetown University, who is also a former public defender.
I don't think we should mount the revolution for change
in our criminal legal system on the backs of prosecutors.
Smith actually knows Chase Boudin and his mom from representing a client in the same prison where Boudin's mom was incarcerated. And to get a sense of her views, I will say she wrote a paper called Can You Be a Good Person and a Good Prosecutor back in 2001. She says when it comes to that question, not to mix metaphors, but the jury is still out.
You know, do I like the so-called progressive prosecutor movement? I mean, some call it a movement. I'm not sure it's a movement yet. I think it's more of a moment, but we'll see.
Interestingly, she says that Boudin actually gave her a call when he was running for office and asked her if she would be willing to donate to his campaign.
His is the only campaign for prosecutor that I ever donated money to, so I want to come clean about that.
So even for this professor, Boudin was different.
Yeah. I mean, she's waiting to see what happens. She's not all that confident, but she does. She is someone who admires Chase Boudin. So I asked Chase Boudin what he thought of that paper. And he says for him, the bottom line is that there is no way he could have made the changes he's made his first year in office as a public defender.
I think you can look at the track record of what I've accomplished in less than a year in San Francisco, despite all the obstacles COVID threw at us. We have made a far bigger impact on far more lives in just 11 months in office than I would have done in my entire career as a public defender.
So, I mean, he's proud of his accomplishments, but what will matter more is what the city's justice system looks like when he leaves office.
Okay, thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Hannah.
Holly J. McDeed is the justice reporter for KALW News. Find the rest of her series looking at Chase Boudin's first year as San Francisco District Attorney and all her reporting at KALW.org. And before we go, let's listen to some new music from a local artist. This is San Francisco band Botanist. Their latest album, Photosynthesis, came out in October. Today's Cross Currents team includes Azul Ekman, David Exume, Sonia Narung, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trevney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.